It's time to talk Padres baseball.
This place is electric.
Our 97.3 The Fan staff is together to break down everything both on and off the field with the San Diego Padres in our commercial-free Epic Padres Roundtable, sponsored by Epic Wings. Buckle up, Prior faithful. We've got a lot to discuss. Now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
That was amazing. I've never seen anyone be more exactly on time than Braden Soprenet.
Right.
That was impressive. Sat down literally 5 seconds ago, and now we have a complete cast for our commercial-free Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable here on 97.3 The Fan. I am Ben Higgins. I am joined to my left by Chris Ello from the Gwynn and Chris program. Hello, Chris.
Game time is on time, Ben.
At the end, as I already mentioned, Braden Soprenet from the Braden Soprenet Show.
You know, you guys golf all the time. A little show and go, Ben.
There you go. Stephen Woods, my co-host in the mornings here on 97.3 The Fan. Woodsy?
I've never been that late to anything in my whole life.
No, you have not. Never. And never our special guest this week, for the second straight week, we have a former Padres opening day starter. Last week it was Tim Stauffer, but pleased to welcome Brian Lawrence to the panel today. B-Law, how are you? Good to see you.
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Really excited. And wow, it's a fun time for Padres fans. What a week it was. What a series against the Milwaukee Brewers. And I wanted to just give everyone a chance. Yesterday's game, if not the best game of the season, certainly one of the most entertaining, exciting, tense, nail-biting games that we have seen, 4-3 and 11 innings. I wanted to give everyone just a thought, like, what stood out to you about that game, an observation you made about that game, Chris, that, you know, you stuck with you after you watched the Padres pull that one out?
Yeah, it's one of the games that felt most like a playoff game, you know, I think this year. And so I'm looking forward to a whole bunch more of those. If you're a baseball junkie, I think you really enjoyed that game. So much strategy, so many decisions and plays made, not made. But I'll tell you my take home, because I looked it up this morning. Luis Campusano went 578 calendar days without a hit from August 31st, 2024 to April 3rd this year. I don't know that a player's ever been further down and out and off the radar than him. And for him to be the hero yesterday, kind of culminating a great season and him coming back, and I was really happy, you know, to see everybody out jumping on his back after that game. He deserved it.
Brian, Chris makes a good point. You know, you played before the designated hitter in the National League era, but that game had a bit of a throwback feel with all the changes that were made and strategic adjustments that Craig Stammen had to make as manager. What stood out to you about that victory yesterday?
You know what? A win, basically. You know, coming back and being able to win that game, and they could have very easily just kind of taken it and said, all right, we won 2 out of 3. Let's just move on to tomorrow. And they battled and never gave up, even down to 2 outs and beating a, you know, guy out to first base to extend the innings and coming up with the big hits at the end. They never gave up. And they should have won it in the ninth, really, because, I mean, that ball looked fair to me down the line.
I thought so.
Me too, sure, man.
So, you know, and to kind of have that not happen, and then the guy lines out to end the inning, and then they continue to just battle and win the game.
Yeah, I went on a bit of a tangent. The height of the sun and the height of Petco Park and the shadow of the baseball that was clearly in fair territory past the back. How could that possibly have been a foul ball?
But that was like in an NFL game when they don't make the first down and they give you the first down on the mark.
Yeah.
It was the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
So, Woodsy, what was one of your observations about the game yesterday?
I mean, just resilience, right? Like, just never, ever giving up and, you know, they're wrapping into double plays at a prodigious rate and the bullpen coming in and Adrian Morejon, like, again, could have been one of those moments like, all right, I gave one up. And what does he do? He punches out the side. Like, these guys are dogs. There's no question. Like, if you question this team, if they want it, if they care, you see that a lot on social media. These guys don't care. They're checked out. It's like, I don't know what game you're watching, but or what team you're watching. They were resilient even when they were losing. This clubhouse has stayed together. You can tell. They really root for each other. It was really a special 3 games, to be honest.
Braden, your observations from yesterday?
Everything that you guys said, but then on top of it, you know, Fernando making incredible plays. Again, like he was even in the lineup yesterday. Goes in that eighth inning, and, you know, he pinch hits. He works a walk, gets himself to second when Renjifo walked, and then a ground ball to first base, which should be an inning ender, or at the very worst for the Brewers, maybe bases loaded and two outs. Fernando scores from second base. He never slows up, just goes for it. Every time you watch this Padres team play, or really Fernando, it seems like, you know, we've missed some of the unbelievable plays that he has made, and he still shows you that he could do that, and what a huge impact on the game he had yesterday, and he didn't even start in it.
I think for me, you know, we often look at baseball and we look at that starting lineup and we match the starting lineup against the other lineup and we match the starting pitcher over the other pitcher and we go, oh, I like our chances tonight, or this one's going to be a tough one.
Sure.
But baseball, and Brian, I'm sure you know this, is about more than just the nine guys on the field. And yesterday's game was what it takes to use an entire roster's full of players, bringing in guys. Sungmon Song, who didn't play until the last, you know, couple of minutes, but stole a base, and with a great slide to get in ahead of the tag at home plate, to use your catchers, both of them, coming into that game, making a switch so you can get Tatis in there, but then knowing you've got Campy in reserve to come in, pinch runners on the base paths. It's a 26-man roster for a reason, and you need all of those guys to pull out wins, especially come October in games like that, which are similar to what you feel like in a playoff game.
You know, you look at it, your stars are going to carry you for most of your games, right? Like, that's what they're there for. That's what they get paid to do. But a full season, and we talk about in the offseason, like, who's our bench players for this upcoming season, because they are so important. Somebody's going to get hurt, and those guys are going to have to play for an extended period of time, and they need to be solid players. And the best ones seem to be the ones that kind of embrace that role and know that's what they're going to do. And even though they might not play for a couple days in a row, they're still going to be prepared to play every inning of every game, and they're going to be ready to go. And those are the ones you want. And if they can do that well, they're, you know, they round out a team so much.
Well, it was a fun one to watch. I mean, there was ups and downs. I mean, Xander hit the home run, but also didn't come through in extra innings. I mean, it was not a linear path to victory, but it made it really entertaining for us fans. So now, with the Phillies and Diamondbacks both losing, the Padres are sitting in the second wild card spot, fifth playoff position in the National League. After months of really just trying to talk about whether or not this is a potential playoff team or not, I think we can all agree now that this is definitely a potential playoff team. Anyone disagree? Right. Okay, so here's the question. Is this a legitimate World Series contender now, based on what we have seen over the last few weeks, Braden? Do you feel like this team, because it can't really make a lot of changes now, is what they have on the roster and on the field enough to make a run in October if they get there?
Well, they've proven that they could beat the two other best teams in the in Major League Baseball, in the Atlanta Braves and the Milwaukee Brewers, sweeping both of them at home, winning the season series against both of them this year. You know, I think the biggest hurdle will always be the Los Angeles Dodgers until things change. And so from that perspective, you know, it makes it difficult to declare whether or not they're a World Series caliber team. But, you know, if you factor out that element of Los Angeles, I mean, there's not one team in Major League Baseball that, you know, I'd be, you know, terrified to play. Not to say I would be terrified to play the Dodgers either, but when you start stacking the Padres up against a lot of teams in Major League Baseball, you know, talent-wise and how they've assembled their team, they're good enough to make a run. I think just the additions of Robbie Ray and Casey Mize give you that opportunity. And the other thing too, like with Robbie Ray yesterday, you know, I said it to Frank during the game as I was in the press box. There was a couple of times, like, where I think there was one of the innings where he walked two guys to get the inning going, and I think he got out of it with no runs. I think he did a good job handling the, you know, Merrill coming up on the ball a little bit too aggressively. I mean, you know, he showed you what a veteran pitcher does that has experience being a starter that can get you innings, more so than what we've seen with the, you know, the rotation for the rotation with all these other arms that two walks to start the inning would just blow up and be like a six-run inning. So I think with a little bit more stability in the starting rotation, even though it's not probably one of the best, I think the fact that you have the best bullpen in baseball, I think the fact that you got your star swinging the bat, I think they can go on a run in October. Would I pick them as the favorite? No. Would if I got to pick any roster in baseball, would they be the one that I would pick to win the World Series? Probably not, but I've seen some weird stuff in baseball before, and I think talent-wise and in the right timing and how things shape up, they could make a run at this thing.
Woods, I don't know about you, but I find it almost difficult to accept because it was such a different conversation last month. And now I'm trying to wrap my mind around, now this team might be good enough. Like, the ceiling may be higher than we thought it was for the San Diego Padres. How much have you changed your view based on what we've seen over these last 3 weeks or so?
I know changed. He never gave up on this team.
Oh, yes, I did. I know better.
They're still
better.
On pace for 500. They still finished 500.
I know better than to get all excited with this many games left to go. Man, terrible things can happen. Great things can happen. We've seen great things happen. But, you know, I'm just trying to be a realist here. But I look at that bullpen and I go, oh, yeah, that's a World Series winning bullpen. Period. The end. No question. I look at the lineup when all those guys are firing, 100%. Will they hit enough in October? It's been the problem. You know, it's been the problem for this team. So if they play like this, Ben, yeah, man, sky's the limit, right? Like, they're certainly not afraid of anybody and not intimidated by anyone at all and have beaten some good teams. They've beaten some good pitchers. They run the bases sometimes a little recklessly, but they're fast. They put pressure on the defense. They look right now like a fairly complete team.
Brian, I mean, you've seen more baseball than the rest of us. You know, what do you see from this roster right now? Does it have championship potential in your mind?
100%. Okay. You know, they just got better in the starting pitching department, which is what's going to get them to the playoffs. And then once you get to the playoffs, and that's what they're thinking about right now. They're not thinking about a World Series. I promise you that. That clubhouse is not even mentioning World Series right now. They're winning each game, each day, to get to the playoffs. Now, once that happens, then now their focus changes, right? And so you get to the playoffs. So starting pitching is going to help them get there because what it's going to do is hopefully allow them to go deeper in games, which saves our bullpen. Because at the pace they were going in the beginning of the year, that bullpen won't be the bullpen that we are seeing. They're going to be dead. It's going to be done. And then they have no chance. So let these guys go deep into games, keep winning games, get to the playoffs. And if you have a fresh-ish bullpen that you can for the playoffs, that team can win 100%. Like, you get the lead sixth inning in the playoffs with that bullpen, it's going to be hard to beat. And so, you know, if they can continue to stay healthy and continue to play like they're playing right now and get to the playoffs, they definitely have a chance.
I would just want to follow up because you mentioned the acquisitions of Casey Mize and Robbie Ray, undoubtedly going to help the team going forward. But Padres still don't have that ace type, you know, shutdown. You know, maybe Michael King can be that, but can you win a World Series without having a real horse at the top of the rotation, a guy who you can feel like, we are almost certainly going to win this one if our guy is on today?
Are you talking about a guy who would be like a number one starter, like the only Padre starter in history with an immaculate inning, that type of guy? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, no, I mean, Mason Miller did it as well, but Brian Lawrence does have an immaculate inning for the San Diego Padres. Can't get more dominant than that.
There
that's
you
true.
Go.
You know, with the starting pitching, yeah, a guy might go out there and not be an ace, if you want to call him that, but every single one of those guys that starts that game can have a day to go out there and you're not scoring on him. You know, there was days I'd walked on the mound and you get to the third inning and I'm like, you're not scoring today, you know? And I definitely wasn't an ace and I was a mediocre starting pitcher, but there were days you just weren't going to hit me. And that's the kind of thing where the stars have to line up in the playoffs to have those outings to win against a you know, maybe a stronger rostered team.
Chris, your thoughts on now the championship potential of the San Diego Padres?
Yeah, winning it all seems pretty improbable just because we're San Diego. It's just never happened for us. But I would just answer by saying there is no one who gave the Nasty Boy Reds of 1990 a chance in hell against that incredible Oakland team. The Reds swept that World Series. The 2019 Nationals could go on and on. The 2003 Marlins. Baseball is set up for things like this to happen in the postseason, and this is the type of roster conceivably that could win. Yes.
We are a quarter of the way already through our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable, commercial-free here on 97.3 The Fan. You can grab your wingman, make it an epic summer with the Epic Wings Buddy Pack, 20 wings, two sauce flavors, including their new limited-time spicy barbecue sauce, four breadsticks, and two house-made dipping sauces for $29.95. That's over a $40 value. I haven't done a roundtable draft in a while. I'll explain how it works for everybody, as well as Brian Lawrence, new to the panel. I will give you a question, and everybody has to give a different answer to the question. So once it's already been taken, you got to go with someone else. We'll go right down the line on this one, starting with Braden Ciprenin and coming back to me. The question is, who has been the biggest difference maker for the San Diego Padres since the All-Star break? Put you on the spot, Braden, but I think there are a lot of potential choices for this one. I don't think we're going to run out of difference makers for the Padres.
No, I definitely don't think so. I mean, I think it goes back to what you said, Ben, about just using the whole roster. The whole roster seems to be contributing. I'm going to go with the probably more obvious answer because we've seen it on MLB Network and in the national media is talking about him a lot, but Jackson Merrill's been unbelievable. You know, he's back to what he looked like in his rookie self, and I think, you know, he's one of the guys that you relied upon going into this year as being a star that needed a star, and you're starting to see it right now. And there's, you know, no surprise to me of why the Padres are doing the damage that they are doing. And but there's a lot of great answers and a lot of good draft picks coming up.
Yeah, I feel like Jackson's a pretty solid number one overall pick in this choice. Woodsy, you got the number two selection, biggest difference maker since the All-Star break.
I'll go with Adrian Morejon, who's just as nasty as it gets. And
wait,
now,
is he still on the team? I thought we traded
Will
him
Warren,
at the deadline.
Right? Yeah,
that's right.
No, he's still here and shoving.
We were idiots to turn down Will Warren, if I recall.
Yeah, that's
reading.
What Bob Nightingale said for sure. Yeah. I think you put him in and the confidence that you feel, knowing you also have Mason behind him, but the ability to go multiple innings. You know, I sat there yesterday for a second and I went, oh, is it going to be Yuki? And I'm like, oh, no, it's going to be Adrian again for a second inning. And he was brilliant, and he's been brilliant all year, really, but he had some scuffles early, but you just feel confident when he's in there, and he wants it really badly. You can tell.
Brian, before I get your choice, I want you to comment on Adrian Morejon, because you've given up the run there, and then you've got the runner at third, and you really know if you give up two, you're putting yourself in a bad situation for the bottom of the inning in the 11th. To have to strand a runner with nobody out at third base has got to be one of the toughest challenges a pitcher can face in the big leagues.
It is, because you realistically there's one option. You got to strike the guy out. Pop ups to the infield, or you know, those are a little tougher. But so he's literally thinking, I have to strike this guy out. And you look at the Padres in that scenario, which is extended games, extra innings. We're built for that with our bullpen, because you basically have three guys that can go in there and strike everybody out: Strada, Morone, Miller. And so you get those out there, and when you need a strikeout, what he does.
All right, your pick for the biggest difference maker for the Padres since the All-Star break. Well, Merrill and Morejon are taken.
Yeah, there's some obvious choices that we can make. I'm going to think outside the box a little bit and how my mind works as a pitcher and what I see in games that aren't always statistically valuable. But it's Hart. Kyle Hart's come in the game.
Nice.
So you think about what he's had to do.
Yeah.
Start games, just pick up innings in the middle of a game that, you know, we end up losing the game, but he's picking up innings that somebody else doesn't have to pitch, which saves our bullpen. Coming in the eighth inning the other day, he's done anything we've needed him to do, and he's done it well since the All-Star break. And, you know, like I said, he's not going to be the guy that pops in everybody's mind, but you think about what he's doing right now to help this team, it's pretty cool.
The heartthrob.
Good answer. Chris, you're next up, fourth pick in our draft. Biggest difference maker for the Padres since the All-Star break.
I'm going to leave a lot of obvious choices for you, Ben, because I'm going to go with Craig Stammen.
Yeah.
And for one reason, because he never stopped trying stuff. When we all gave up on this team, he he's at the point man for this, right? There was obviously a lot of input, but to me, the thing that changed the season and got him going, for whatever reason, maybe it was just luck and timing, was the chaos pitching That changed it right then and there. Kyle Hart was a big part of it. But I, just the fact that he never stopped trying stuff in a season where we had all given up, that is what I think. And I think everybody saw that on this in this clubhouse and said, you know what, nobody's given up. We can't give up. So I'm going to go with Craig Stammen for that decision alone.
There's going to be some really good unsigned draft picks at the end of this draft that didn't get picked, including Fernando Tatis Jr., who's just not going to get mentioned because I'm not picking Fernando Tatis Jr., so he's gonna end up on the board. I considered like the catching tandem, which has been obviously such a difference maker just because they've been hitting constantly, but I don't think we can have this draft without saying Luis Ranjifo and what he has done from out of nowhere off the DFA scrap heap from the Milwaukee Brewers and coming in and, you know, quickly moving up, often hitting in the two hole for the San Diego Padres.
Hit cleanup the other night.
Hit cleanup. You can put him lower in the order. He can run around a little bit. He can give you some pop, including the first career grand slam with an OPS, you know, well over 800 since joining the San Diego Padres. It's when you get those unexpected contributions that really allow a team, I think, to sometimes go on a streak like the Padres are going on right now. You count on Jackson Merrill and Fernando Tatis Jr., maybe not to be as hot as Jackson's been, but you kind of need them to keep doing that. But when you get guys like Luis Ranjifo out of nowhere playing the way that they are playing, that really makes a difference on a roster and to the depth of a lineup. So, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that they sign him and all of a sudden Potter's been reeling off a bunch of wins. So, Luis Ranjifo is my pick.
Apologies to Ty France, who I still think is in the lead for team MVP for the season.
Well, that's because he's done it the whole year, not just the second half.
Right, yeah. such a tough one. All right, I want to start with B-Law on this one. Because there's been a lot of talk about the coaching staff for the San Diego Padres this season. A lot about the hitting coach, Steven Souza Jr., who took, I mean, from this panel, from fans, slings and arrows for the first half of the season. But I want to broaden it out as well, include the pitching coach, Ruben Niebla, Ben Fritz, the entire staff, and ask you, Brian, and then everyone else can chime in. How much impact do coaches have on the major league level? Like, how much of a difference can they really make? Is it a little? Is it a lot? In your experience, like, how big of an impact do the coaches have?
I think it's a matter of who the player is and whether they take instruction or they just, like, are set in their ways and they do their own thing. But for me, coming up, I had Darrell Ackerfeld, who was our bullpen coach, who had been with me almost every level of my minor league career. So I had him, I think, 3 seasons in a row in the minor leagues, and then we both came to the big leagues pretty much together. So, you know, a player comes over and a coach is only seeing him for the first time. Yeah, there's videos in his head, but there's not the history that... So I could go out, and if I was off, Ack would come and be like, hey, I see this. Because he had seen me good for so long, he could see it when it was a little off. And we could correct that, you know, and then you have guys that are just good at what they do. And then, you know, they can say something and it just clicks like that to help a player. But essentially for me, you know, all the talk of firing this and that was crazy to me because the player has to go out there and do it. It all comes down to the player. If you're not good, it's because of what you're not doing or it's on you. It should never be on a coach. There's not a coach out there that's telling somebody to do something that's going to make them not be good. And so that's where I kind of draw the line. Now, you know, there's let somebody have some history, you know, let them be a coach for a while to learn. And then you kind of see, okay, they're pretty good or they're not. And you move on from there. But for me, it's coming down there. I never blamed a coach for if I was bad. It was my fault. And so now, could there be somebody there to help me? Sure. But it's essentially I still have to do it.
Woods, I know that's been your take pretty much all season long when it comes to the coaching staff. It's on the players far more than the coaches. But as Brian says, I mean, coaches can make a huge impact with just a well-chosen word and an observation here or there if they make the right one.
Yeah, you know, they're such different, right? Like pitching coach and hitting coach, in my opinion, too, it's just different. the reaction that you need, the load, the hands, and yeah, you can look and say, hey, I saw you were, had your hands a little higher. Is that something you're trying? You know, it. Souza, I thought, was an unfair scapegoat. These guys get paid a lot of money. They get paid a lot of money because they know how to hit, and they've done it for a long time. And you know, we keep bringing hitting coaches in here, and I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not going to give him a ton of credit for the rebound, and I wasn't going to give him a ton of blame for having the worst offense. It's so hard to do. Hitting is so hard, and it's not like he's installed a new offense that they're trying to learn. You know, the playbook's real thick. No, they're going to go out and do what they're trying to do, and it's got to be hard, man, walking into a new situation and having guys that have done it, and they're making $30 million a year, and they know how they want to hit. And maybe they learned something in the offseason that they shouldn't have, and now you got to train that out of them. It's a huge task, and I think the hitting coach is the most unforgiving, biggest scapegoated gig in the big leagues right now.
I coached minor leagues for the Cubs for a while, and the hardest thing I had to do as a coach was I coached myself, and I tell all my players when we first started, you know, these are A-ball guys, rookie guys, you are going to be your best coach your entire career, so you better learn yourself and learn what you do well, learn what you don't do well, and because you're going to have a different coach along the way, but you need to be your best coach. And so the hardest thing for me as a player, because I was my best coach, like I knew myself better than anybody, I had to coach 12, 13 guys now, and they're all different. So I had to say something to him, and this other guy was doing the same thing, but I had to tell him something different for him to figure it out. And so you have to learn all those guys, and then you have to learn how you can talk to them, if you can yell at them, if you can't yell at them, and all this stuff. It's hard. It's a tough gig.
You know, based on something you said, it's our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable, commercial-free by Epic Wings, always fresh, never frozen. Brian Lawrence, former Padres pitcher, opening day starter, is our guest. And something you said about coaching makes me wonder if where major league teams get it wrong, because there's a lot of turnover for various reasons, but manager gets fired, usually there's a new coaching staff. Bad season, hey, let's clean out a few of the coaches. And I wonder if a team really just ever stuck with a coaching staff for an extended period of time and give them a chance to learn players over 2-3 seasons where they really get to know those guys better, that a little patience, Chris, you know, might actually be what is required. Tough to do when fans are screaming every day on social media and on radio going, got to get rid of this guy, got to get rid of that guy. But is there not enough patience maybe in Major League Baseball with coaching staffs who will probably only get better as you give them more time to do their jobs?
Yeah, I don't even worry about the fans and the social media. I worry about loudmouth afternoon talk show hosts who call for the hitting coach to be fired in May and in June and July and kept coming up with every reason to do it, despite what Brian's saying. I fully believed it was the players not executing, but I honestly thought just some new different voice needed to be, you know, entered into the equation. But, you know, they stuck it out, and it's paying off. Yeah, I mean, patience is a great thing. How many teams just keep chasing their tail and firing this, starting anew, and selling a whole new, well, we're rebuilding type of thing? That's why I love what A.J. Preller does every August by refusing to do that and continuing to just go out and push and try to go after it. So, yeah, patience, we're all pretty bad in that category, but baseball owners and GMs are near the top of that list.
Well, and Braden, look at the San Diego Padres. Yes, they've had some good pitching staffs, really good bullpens in recent years. Offenses have been hit or miss. The consistency, and this goes back to Belaw's days, you know, has been in the pitching coach. You know, they've had a lot of consistency with Darren Balsley, Ruben Niebla. They have not made the changes like they do with hitting coaches, which they go through, you know, basically like you're changing, you know, folding laundry, like next pair, next pair, next pair. They keep going. But why not try to stick with other guys like you stuck with your pitching coaches for so many years?
Yeah, I don't know. Like you see it now more and more in like college football, and you see it in a lot of, you know, the NFL, and you see like these organizations that, you know, pivot so fast because they think they can just instantly win a championship by changing some things, or maybe the expectations are too high about, you know, the team that they built. It would be nice to see. I just think in this day and age of instant gratification that we have as a society, that you're going to see more teams that are like, you know what, we better see you guys win, or like, we're changing everything. I don't necessarily think that's a good idea nor a good plan. Obviously, a lot of the circumstances have been different with the Padres, the different coaching staffs that they have had. But the reality is, the manager's changed, but the staff has been kind of the same for the last handful of years. Of what this team would be like if they, had the same guy for a longer period of time. Again, it's not like they were just getting rid of everybody. I mean, Melvin left and Mike Schilt left, so it's a little bit different. But I do think it'd be interesting to see like what these teams would do if they, they stuck with some of their guys through some tough times, and as Brian said, like, they get to learn these players. As a coach that at the high school football level, there's definitely kids that over the course of like the last couple of months I've learned, like Brian was saying, I can yell at this kid, I can't yell at this kid, or I have to be a little bit more, technical with this guy, and this kid's not going to understand that. That's hard to do in one season, and that's hard to do to throughout the entire year. So not surprised that things were kind of not going well for Steven Souza Jr. potentially at the beginning, and now they are. You got to give some of these guys some time, and I've always thought a good rule of thumb is give a coaching staff 3 years to see if they can turn things around. But I don't think a lot of front offices want to wait 3 years anymore.
So many things have changed over just the last week or so in the National League playoff race, but I wanted to give everybody a chance to handicap where they feel like the race is heading now. And I was going to say Padres, Phillies, Diamondbacks. Got to throw in the Miami Marlins, who are not going away. They're just a game and a half out of a playoff spot as well. So, Chris, as you look at those 4-2 teams, where they're standing right now, who do you like's best chances to emerge with the final two playoff spots now in the National League?
Who's the who's in the eighth spot right now? Because that's where the Padres were 33 days ago. They were in the eighth spot. They're now in the second spot. They've passed six teams in 33 days. So I don't know that you don't have to include the Cardinals and the everybody
Pirates
else too.
And
yeah,
Nationals.
But yeah, it sure seems like the Padres obviously have momentum right now. The Phillies, I feel like they have the pedigree, but I've always felt this team has gotten a little older this year, and I think that they may fade. I do like the Marlins because they're young and hungry, and their pitching has been pretty good, but that injury to Kyle Stowers right now really takes a big bat out of the middle of their order. So I'll say Arizona gets there because I'm a fan of Torey Lovullo and the Padres.
Woodsy, what do you think in terms of the playoff race at this point? Who are your two favorites?
Exact same as what Elo said. I like Arizona. I don't think they're going away. They're pesky. We played them. They're tough. They're tough. And Corbin Carroll is a freak. He is a freak. They had some stat yesterday. Fastest to 100 home runs, fastest to 100 triples. He is a superstar. Ketel Marte can get you anytime. Arenado has been solid. And their pitching, as rough as it was, like Merrill Kelly shoved last time he was out. If they could figure that out, I think they'll be there at the end.
They could get Corbin Burns back. I've heard some whispers.
Is that right?
Maybe three or four starts in September. I don't know what that does for them, but it's a former Cy Young winner.
Certainly a boost to that pitching staff. But I like Lovullo too. I think they're a good team. And I think they're going to be, unfortunately, pretty scrappy to that last series of the year here in San Diego, which is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't disagree. The Phillies still do have Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler and the pitching experience that... they're such a hot and cold team, though. If Kyle Schwarber goes on another tear at some point...
They should win a lot more than they do, I think.
I always feel that way, so I don't know. I still kind of give them the edge. Obviously, it feels like the Padres are just on this freight train express right to the postseason, but... Again, as you mentioned, we've still got 40-plus games to go.
A lot of time.
A lot can change between now and then. Brian, how do you kind of handicap the rest of the NL playoff race?
Well, obviously, I'm putting the Padres up there.
Yeah.
They're on a streak right now, and it all comes down to health. Who can stay healthy and keep their guys on the field playing? A little luck involved, but it's just grinding out to the end of the season. So the Padres are there. And I don't know that I can count against the Phillies with the guys they have. You know, those two guys at the top of the rotation are just really tough.
Back end's pretty good, too, yeah. With Duran.
You know, they're built on paper to be there. And if they, you know, just like I say, stay healthy and continue to do, they're going to be okay. And it's who can get hot. You know, you look at the Padres, right, where they're 15-4, and it climbed right back. And it's a streak. It's a game of streaks because there's going to be some down. We're going to – I hate to say it, but we're going to lose 2 or 3, 4 games in a row. It's going to happen. And then you just got to be able to bounce back and win 4 or 5 in a row like they're doing now to be there at the end. But I like the Padres and the Phillies.
Why are you so negative, calling for a 4-game losing streak right now, Brian?
Come on. It's going to happen.
Realism.
That's baseball. That's baseball wisdom and experience speaking.
Yeah, we're not used to wisdom on this panel, Brian.
It's weird for about the Diamondbacks. I feel like last year's team felt so much more dangerous with Eugenio Suarez and Josh Naylor. It just doesn't feel like it's as good of a team, but yet, I don't know, Torrey Lovello, good manager. They continue to play well. Braden, what are your thoughts on the playoff race from here on out?
I don't think Philly makes it. I think they're going to run out of gas. I think their age is showing here in the stretch. And, you know, they got tougher opponents coming up. I mean, they got battles on their hands that they're going to have to navigate and get through to finish the season. So does Arizona, but I just think, you know, Arizona's got, you know, guys like Corbin Carroll and a little bit more youth, and I think that, you know, I think they got a little bit more hunger to get to the postseason after, you know, not making it the last couple of years. So I think the Padres and Diamondbacks make it through. I think Chicago catches Milwaukee. I said that last week. Seem a little bit far-fetched. They're 4 games out now, I think, maybe 3.5. They still got 7 games against Milwaukee.
Crazy, man.
I mean, and that's going to be a dogfight. And I think, and Kyle Glazer said it on my show during the trade deadline, you know, after the Brewers didn't get Scooble, he said the Cubs smell blood in the water and they're going to hunt them down. And I totally think that's the case, especially with what we saw with Milwaukee this week here in town. So I think your 3 wild cards are going to be Milwaukee, San Diego, and Arizona, probably in that order. Padres are still well behind, you know, that top wild card spot, whether it be Chicago or the Brewers. But that's how I think it shakes out. And I honestly think Miami probably finishes one spot out. I'm just not a huge believer in the Phillies, despite their 2 studs at the top of the rotation and their elite.
They hardly ever win a game when those top 2 or 3 guys don't start. That's killed them all year.
And if that was the case, if it went Milwaukee, San Diego, Arizona, Padres would dodge the Cubs and not have to go to Wrigley Field for a best-of-3 against that red-hot team. But as we pointed out this morning, then you're probably facing Jacob Mizorowski in game
Correct.
One of a best-of-3 series.
But you're not facing Scooble on the road. In game 2.
Hey, if you could tie with them, though, you have the season tiebreaker now.
So that is an interesting development as well. Continuing on with our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable, you mentioned Corbin Burnes trying to come back from a long injury. Looks like Joe Musgrove is going to be trying to do that as well. Perhaps in less than 2 weeks, we could see him make his season debut and first time since 2024. Brian, let me ask you. I kind of brought it up earlier this week. What are fair expectations for Joe Musgrove? Like, how long of a leash can he have? As you know, there's going to be some rust to shake off, but he's also in the middle of a playoff chase here. Like, where should fans have their minds expecting Joe Musgrove to be when he comes back from a long surgery?
You know, for me, watching him pitch, it's always about his breaking pitches. If he's able to dial those in and get them where he normally is, which could be a tough thing with an elbow injury, but I think you got to take it slow with him and bring him back, get him in the games, but it's going to come back to a guy like Hart, yeah, being able to follow him and allowing him to only go 2 innings, 3 innings in the beginning, and you're able to fill that gap to not press your bullpen. So it's a piggyback situation, to where hopefully he can get built up, and if he's, you know, towards the top of his game in the playoffs, you're just adding another guy that can help us out.
I mean, the buildup is crazy, right? You've gone through it before, right? And what's that like for a starting pitcher coming off an injury, or even just get after just the dead arm, getting a rest for a while, you got to build back up. What's that like?
I think especially with the elbow, it's more about trust. It's throwing a pitch and trusting that your elbow is going to stay together. I think that's the biggest thing hurdle to try to climb over is just throwing a ball and hoping your elbow doesn't explode. Like, it's just, and once you get past that, you're back to 100% and you can just move on, mentally move on. That's the biggest thing. It's where he's at in the mental side of it and trusting his elbow to be able to throw pitches.
Well, mentally, he came out the other day and said, no, I think AJ needs me to go seven and be. I'm like, hey, relax. You know, you brought that up on the on the. I mean, I don't think he's any different than anybody else in our rotation. You know, Robbie Ray didn't really have it yesterday, hasn't really had it since he's gotten here. But Craig went out and got him. And said, no, I got a pen, and we're going to try to win this game, and pulled him. And I think you do the exact same with Joe. I think you do the exact same with Michael King. I think you do what you have to do. You can't burn the bullpen out, but you also can't afford to punt games unless they're just out of hand. You know, 8-0 in the second. Okay, we're gonna turn the page to tomorrow.
And, Chris, I trust the Padres organization to be somewhat clear-eyed when it comes to Joe Musgrove. We are all rooting so hard for him to come back and be Joe Musgrove that you want to give him every opportunity. But if he scuffles, you know, not going to be surprised. First start, too. Like, how long can you keep giving him those chances? Like, if this was the April or May, you go, yeah, just keep going. He'll figure it out. But again, when you're in a playoff race and you're one game up on two teams and every game is so critical, you can't be necessarily wasting starts on a guy who hasn't figured it out yet. So that's kind of my question is why is what kind of runway and leeway can you give to Joe Musgrove as he comes back?
I think he can fit him in nicely. I really do, because right now you have five guys in your starting rotation, and that does not include Kyle Hart. I have no problem with Walker Buehler piggybacking a game with Joe Musgrove or Vasquez, whatever the case may be here, to get Joe to a situation where potentially you could use him in one of those games that Brian's talking about in October on a day like he was against the Mets, where he's just not going to give up a run. Yep. He's capable of it. So let's try to get him there. If he doesn't get there, you know, you got to shoot for the stars, keep your feet on the ground type of thing. So I'm excited Joe's coming back. I don't think he'd be rushing it. I mean, to get to here. If he feels he's here, then I think he's legitimately here. I don't know. I'm still mad at the Dodgers sitting guys out all season, and now they're all back throwing seven innings, striking out 12.
Yeah, Brad,
drives me crazy.
Brad, this is part of the trouble I'm having is, you know, I have formed these opinions about the Padres all season long. One of them was being, hey, if they don't get Joe Musgrove or Nick Pivetta back, at least one of them, then what are we doing here? This team just is not going to have it. And now I'm watching this team without either Joe Musgrove or Nick Pivetta look like a really, really good baseball team. And I'm wondering, I was wrong about that too. How badly do they need Joe Musgrove back at this point, and what does that comeback look like to you?
I think they need him for the final month. I think they're going to need him for September more so than October. I think it'd be nice to have him in October. Obviously, he's got playoff experience. He's got playoff experience in a Padres uniform. I think him being one of the leaders down there, it's a lot harder. It's already hard to lead as a starting pitcher. It's even more difficult to lead a team and help lead a team when you're a starting pitcher that hadn't pitched in 2 years. So I think that's a little bit of a boost. I think you can never have as many, you never have enough pitching, right? So I think he's going to be very valuable in getting to the playoffs, probably more so than in the playoffs. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. You only really need like three starters, maybe four max in the postseason. You rely heavily on your bullpen. They have enough of those guys, I think, to get you a couple of games. It'd probably be a little bit nicer probably to have like a Joe Musgrove start, then you can move guys like Buehler into the bullpen maybe. But I think they're going to need him at during September probably more so than anything else. But as you mentioned, Ben, like. Yeah, you watch this team, and I said on July 23rd, I was like, this team's cooked. There's no way they're going to be able to make it through this. And then they go on a tear. I think the more frustrating thing is we knew they were capable of doing this, and they had to flip a switch in the second half of the season to be in this spot. It'd be a lot easier if they just, kind of did this at the beginning of the year. But I think they are going to need Joe Musgrove in September.
Well, maybe next year, and we can see a faster start and not have to go through this again. It's our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable on 97.3 The Fan. Brian Lawrence is our special guest. Epic Wings, try their new limited-time spicy barbecue. Which is the classic barbecue with a touch of Carolina Reaper pepper for a smooth kick.
I'm sorry, did you say smooth?
Smooth, yeah. I had one that wasn't quite smooth a couple of weeks ago.
I was
going
to say, I don't remember your experience being that smooth.
I think they just put a little too much Carolina Reaper on that
let's
one.
Let's be clear, yeah. That was not Epic Wings' fault.
No, that was Ben's fault, for sure. Seventh inning stretch. We take a little break from the baseball. Off topic. I didn't get to it last week, so I'm just going to bring it up. I went to Vegas a week and a half ago with my son for his 21st birthday. What is either your favorite or least favorite thing about going to Las Vegas? Braden, you want to start us out again here on the end?
Yeah, I've only been once since being 21, so, and that was a couple years ago. I think Vegas is kind of like the concept is very cool. What I don't like about Vegas is my experience now at age like older than 21, right? It's just a different Vegas than it was that I hear stories from, like, my parents and then even my grandparents that, like, you know, talked about a little bit different of an experience, you know, where things used to be super cheap and they got all their money on the gambling part. So, you know, missing out on that part of Vegas, I think, is kind of my least favorite. But it's cool. Like, they usually have some cool stuff that you can't, you know, do here in San Diego, obviously. Honestly, even if you don't even bet at the sports book, watching games at a sports book is kind of like a surreal experience the first time you do it. I did that a couple of years ago, and you know, without even having any money in the games, you just hear cheering all over the place, and you're trying to find the TV that they are watching that they are gambling on. So I think watching sports in Vegas is pretty cool. I think the fact that it's uber expensive now sucks.
Chris, you've had to go a ton for, you know, Mountain West and tournaments and be in that city, not necessarily on vacation every single time. I love Braden's observation because when I first went there, there's something about $1.99 steak and eggs, even though it's not a very good steak. It's
you
like,
didn't need it at 4 in the morning, but you got it anyway.
Yet I'm still only paying $1.99 for this, which was kind of cool. What is either your favorite or least favorite thing about Las Vegas?
Yeah, he took mine. I mean, I did go in the days when they begged you to come by offering you buffets for $2 and $3 and room rates that were $14. It was so incredibly inexpensive, so I missed that. I think what I still like, though, about Vegas is everybody trying to outdo each other. You know, circa, you know, their pool area is something that is just almost doesn't even seem real. And then you go down the street or, you know, into on the strip, and then there's the Sphere, which doesn't seem real. So I think going to Vegas and just seeing every place outdo the next one is kind of exciting. But I do miss the free food or the cheap food. And the experience of seeing those neon lights for the first time when that really didn't exist anywhere else on Earth. Now it's not as dramatic.
B-Law, you had any couple of trips to Vegas in your past?
Well, you know, I'm not a big gambler.
Yeah.
I will a little, but I think for me, which I did play in Vegas, so I was in AAA with the Padres.
What was the nickname? Were they the Area 51? What were they back then?
Stars.
The Las Vegas Stars, yeah.
So we were the Stars, and then it went to the Dodgers the next year. They moved to
Summerlin or wherever they're. Portland. Oh, the Padres moved to Portland, yeah.
Portland. Beavers. And so, you know, when you're staying and playing there, it's a little different. You're not. But we would, me and my roommate would, on our way home, the Palace Station was on our way home. We'd exit, and we'd go in, and it was like a $5 steak and eggs at midnight, you know, after a game.
It has to be midnight. Yeah.
And so we did that. But I just think people watching, like going and just seeing the different people walk around, and, you know, it's very interesting to me. So, you know, other than that, I'm like I said, I'm not a big gambler, but I do enjoy Vegas.
Woods, what about you?
I've actually never eaten a meal in Las Vegas, not once. Never eat when I go there. That town has gotten me many, 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 many times. But going back older, you know, my wife and I went to the Sphere. Been twice. It's the coolest experience of your life. I mean, it just, you can't put a price on it. They actually did put a price on it. It was quite expensive.
Yeah, they do.
But we had, it remains one
cheaper
of,
to drive by and look at.
Oh, yeah. It remains one of the best nights I ever had in my whole entire life is seeing you two there with my wife. And it was, I'll never forget it. Ever, ever, ever. And the worst thing was, like, we went back with the kids and a couple of years ago. Valet is like, or like, to park your car is like $80 a day now. It's like $100 to $80, $100 a day, which is insane even for me.
I was shocked. I just wanted to sit down at like a PyGow table to play a few hands, and like I couldn't find one that had a minimum of less than $100.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going, no chance I am betting $100 a hand on anything.
You can tell how old somebody is now by the cheapest table they were able to play in Vegas. Right.
Yeah. I couldn't find less than a $2
table.
$2 blackjack?
I played $1
at Harrah's. Okay. $1. They also had War. Do you believe that?
Yeah, they actually had Casino War. Yep. Like, one card. Oh, I lost.
It's just, I mean, it's pretty good after you've had 60 drinks. It's kind of an easy one. Like, here you go. High card win.
The dealer to tell you if you won or not?
That's right.
I think for me, it's kind of both the best and the worst, because I know why they do this, but I'm always fascinated by going into one of those mega casinos. And you can get so lost in those. Oh, yeah. They have designed them where
they are just very awful.
But I almost turn it into like a game. Like, okay, how do I get out of here? It's like an escape room. If you do get out, though, you
may get out on the wrong side and not be able to find your way back.
So it's both fun and also frustrating when it's like, no, I can't possibly be back here. How did I end up where I started? They've got me right back to the casino again.
It's crazy.
I can't even believe it. All right, last couple of minutes here of our Epic Wings, Epic Padres round. Table. Let's look ahead. Padres head on the road. Cleveland Guardians for 3, and then the New York Mets. And Chris, I heard the stat on your show. Padres only have, I think, 4 series now left against, was it playoff teams?
I think so.
The rest of the season. And by the way, 8 of their next 10 series are against teams with losing records. Now, some of those are still playoff contenders, like the Twins are under 500. The Guardians are under 500, but plenty to play for in the American League. So, but they have a chance here, you know, over these next 3 to 4 weeks to maybe even give themselves a cushion before they get to that last week against the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? But I saw the A's lose 11 in a row and go in and beat the Red Sox 2 out of 3 last week at Fenway. I saw the Rockies win their first series on the road since May, beating the Diamondbacks last night. You know, I know, and I'm sure the Padres know, none of this is given. So go out and play good baseball. I'm really happy that Brian brought something up earlier that I'm going to pay a close attention to, which is innings by the starters, because this team needs to keep winning and keep the bullpen fresh enough to be as dominant as it can be. Those are the things I'm watching here.
I think you also mentioned the Diamondbacks have 8 series remaining against playoff teams, including having to face the Phillies. So they have to battle against each other before the Padres finish against the Diamondbacks. As you look ahead, Brian Lawrence, what do you kind of see for the Padres in the near future on this road trip and beyond?
Well, I've always said there's no bad team in the big leagues. They're all major league teams. I remember I was on a flight coming from somewhere, me and Jake sat next to each other, and we were absolutely dominating teams. Like, we were just pitching. We were going into Kansas City, and they were not good. And we're like, you know, how we got, you know, another one here. And I think we both gave up 5 runs in the first inning. And so it's like, there's no bad teams. They all can get you at any day. And so you continue, you got to play baseball the way they're playing right now, and just put your head down and play the game correctly no matter who they're playing. And they know that. It's going out there and getting it done and just continue to play the way they're playing right now.
Woods, you said on the show, 3-3 on this road trip. I mean, treading water on the road is usually good, but you also want to take advantage while your team's playing really well and stack up some wins.
They've played really well against the lesser teams this year. So just keep doing what you're doing. 4-2 would be fantastic. You are going up against some good pitching in Cleveland. And, you know, Stephen Kwan's coming around. Jose Ramirez, always nasty threat to get you. The Mets are a wounded animal. You know, they're playing for pride at this point. They got to figure it out. So, I'm excited. But just go 1-0 against Gavin Williams tomorrow, which is a tall order.
Yeah, good pitching matchup. Michael King against Gavin Williams to start this road trip. Brandon, I'll give you the last thought here. Final minute or so of the roundtable of what the Padres road looks like to you ahead.
Yeah, just keep pace and try to stay ahead of, you know, Philly and Arizona. They got to keep winning games, like Brian said, and, you know, it'd be nice to take 2 out of 3 against both of these opponents. Mets actually playing a lot better baseball as of late. Again, it's not who you play, it's when you play them. So even though they're playing 8 of the next 10 series against, you know, teams that aren't very good, you got to keep doing what has gotten you to this point and keep focusing on yourself. And if the Padres focus on themselves, they're going to be cruising into the playoffs here. But still a lot can happen in baseball.
Beware of former manager Andy Green now.
That's right.
Oh, Mets, man. You know, I forgot about that.
Right. Us here. Can I throw one quick thing? We got 30 seconds. I sat and listened to Brian here, and I was trying not to look at him. And as I was listening, his voice took me to somebody. I could not figure it out until about 15 minutes ago. It's probably too late now for you to talk enough for everybody else to hear. Larry Bird, sitting right next to me.
Yeah.
Got a little Larry Bird.
Yeah.
Your voice, it was spot on. So anyway, I loved it. I love Larry Bird, so it was good.
All right, with that, we have wrapped it up.
I'm throwing something completely out.
We have that all in our minds. We are done. We'll be back next Thursday with another Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable for Braden Suprenant, Stephen Woods, Chris Ello, and our special guest, Brian Lawrence. I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your Thursday from all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.